Hello and welcome to SwissInfo.ch's programme for November the 16th, the exact day 75 years ago that Swiss chemist Albert Hofmann first synthesised LSD. I'm Thomas Stevens.
I was at basketball practice after school. Someone came in and told us we stopped playing and I walked home. Stunned, disoriented.
Like Daniel Warner, a Swiss-American professor on international relations, if you're at least 55 years old, you can no doubt remember where you were when you heard that John F. Kennedy had been killed. Later, I'll speak to Warner about Kennedy and also look at the Swiss reaction to the president's death 50 years ago. But first, more tragic news. On November the 8th, Typhoon Haiyan, one of the most powerful storms ever recorded, slammed into six central Philippine islands. Authorities say more than 3,500 people have so far been confirmed dead, but local officials on hardest-hit Leyte Island say there may be 10,000 victims in the provincial capital of Tacloban alone. A massive international relief operation has been launched, with Switzerland sending five experts from the Swiss Humanitarian Aid Unit. A week later, aid was beginning to reach some of the 500,000 people displaced and 11.5 million affected by the disaster. New climate data show that with rising temperatures, more extreme weather of this intensity should be expected. SwissInfo.ch's Joe Fay spoke to Ulrike Lohmann at the Institute for Climate and Atmospheric Science at the Federal Institute of Technology in Zurich about climate trends.
One of the biggest questions that we're trying to understand is why exactly this typhoon was so strong. Is there any way that you can explain why Typhoon Haiyan in particular was so powerful?
The Western Pacific is an area that is prone to very powerful tropical cyclones just because that's home to the warmest sea surface temperatures and actually warm ocean temperatures within a given depth. And that's quite important because for all tropical cyclones to form, they take their energy from evaporation of ocean water. So the warmer the ocean water, the more energy is there, and the more energy can be released when condensation in this big thunderstorm clouds sets in. So the western tropical Pacific is actually an area where there are the strongest tropical cyclones, but having said that, also tropical cyclones of Category 5 form in the northern Atlantic, as was the case with Hurricane Katrina and Rita in 2005.
And the warm ocean temperatures, which you mentioned there, is that something that's been quite unusual this year, or is that a pattern that we've been seeing evolving over the past few years, or perhaps even longer, in this area specifically, I should say?
I mean, there is for sure we have global warming, so we know that human activity has contributed to ocean temperatures becoming warmer. In addition to that, you have natural variability, so you have especially in the Pacific the changing between the El Niño and La Niña phenomena, so you have natural variability on top to increasing ocean temperatures at the surface and deeper below due to global warming.
And is there any certainty as to whether we'll be seeing more of these kind of very powerful storms in the future?
Yes. We have projections of an increase in intensity of the most powerful storms. That's what we projected from climate model projections towards the end of the 21st century for a business as usual scenario. We see overall the number of tropical cyclones is expected to decrease, but the most powerful become even more stronger. That's what is generally forecast, and it makes sense that the most powerful become even stronger just because the ocean is warming and that's where the main energy for the tropical cyclone comes from.
And would it also be fair to say that areas that hadn't previously been affected by these kind of unusual types of weather will in the future be seeing them as well?
So far, we haven't seen any changes in the area where tropical cyclones form. Because not only do you need warm ocean temperatures, you also have to be some distance away from the equator because the tropical cyclone needs to rotate, and you can only rotate if you're away from the equator, and you need to have convective activity there to form the big thunderstorm clouds and all that. And that doesn't have seemed to be changing that much. But we know that occasionally the tracks of a tropical cyclone are very different than other ones. For instance, there was a single one in the southern Atlantic, and normally the southern Atlantic is too cold and doesn't have the type of weather disturbance that's needed for tropical cyclone activity. So it's hard to say, but Yes, occasionally you will see some in different areas, that for sure.
Jo Fay speaking to atmospheric physicist Ulrike Lohmann. Jerry Velasquez, originally from the Philippines, is head of advocacy and outreach for the Geneva-based UN Office for Disaster Risk Reduction. He told Jo Fay that the evacuation procedures and warning systems in place are highly regarded in the Philippines, which experiences about 20 typhoons a year, but people simply didn't realise how powerful Typhoon Haiyan would be, with storm surge of up to 7 metres. He also pointed to other problems that intensified the typhoon's impact.
The area that was hit has a lot of prevailing poverty, and if you look at the ranking of the Philippines, it's, I think, 125th ranked on GDP per capita, just below Republic of Congo. And because of that, most of the housing was actually made of light materials, which is prone from destruction from a typhoon such as this nature. The other thing is that most of the places where they were supposed to go and evacuate either did not exist because they haven't really created evacuation centers, or in some cases where they did go to schools and so on, those equally were destroyed.
Velasquez said better prevention was now needed.
This third year in a row that a disaster of this nature, not this scale, but this nature, has actually struck the country. So it has become very frequent. This is not once-in-a-lifetime events anymore. So this has become now the new normal. So we have to adjust to the new normal. And that would mean changing the way, you know, we plan where to put people. And if we select to, in fact, place people and assets in these coastal areas, we have to come up with something else, like these typhoon shelters, or we have to improve the building standards, or we address poverty.
Jerry Velasquez from the UN Office for Disaster Risk Reduction. 50 years ago, on November the 22nd, 1963, US President John F. Kennedy was killed, sending shockwaves around the world. Everyone of that generation can remember where they were when they heard the news. Daniel Warner, formerly of the Graduate Institute of International Studies in Geneva, was 17 when the 46-year-old president was shot in Dallas. Warner was born in New York, but has lived in Geneva for more than 40 years. I asked him what he could remember of that day and his general impressions of JFK.
It is a defining moment for my generation. We all remember. I was at basketball practice after school. Someone came in and told us we stopped playing, practicing, and I walked home. Stunned, disoriented, and got home, and then my parents were there, and we just sat and watched the television.
What had been your impression of Kennedy up until then? Were you you impressed by him?
Oh, yes. I mean, it was not just Kennedy. I mean, it was the aura of the people around him. You must remember that we're coming out of the Eisenhower era, a president who had trouble speaking. He was inarticulate. And Kennedy was someone who represented for me, my family, for many people, a different generation, a different culture. So it was not only a political change, it was a fundamental cultural change. There was huge hope in terms of more European, more cosmopolitan, cultural.
Daniel Warner. Switzerland was close to the United States at the time. It had represented U.S. interests in Cuba since 1961, and reaction to Kennedy's death, both in newspapers and the street, was strong. Here are some comments gathered in the French-speaking part of the country immediately after the assassination.
It's completely disgusting. It makes me sick. He and his wife were very nice. I think they were well-liked all over the world.
I was appalled to see that a man had been killed who had only tried to do good. He worked for peace. I'm very upset.
Revolted. I think he was an honest man who hadn't really done anything wrong. It's disgusting.
He was a young president, and it's just proof that even though people may be young, they can be very capable.
I'm American, and I'm deeply saddened and shocked by this. We're really sad.
This is a government statement made by the then defense minister, Paul Chaudet.
The Swiss people feel with all their heart the suffering of the American people and the huge loss that the death of President Kennedy represents for the whole world. Our sympathies go first to his family, but also to the massive number of people who put their hope in the success of the goals he strived towards. His name will go down in history.
Former Defence Minister Paul Chaudet having a last word on that look at the 50th anniversary of the death of John F. Kennedy. Finally, some news that is meant to prevent a disaster. On November the 11th, Switzerland's largest cantonal bank was named alongside UBS and Credit Suisse as a financial institution that's too big to fail. The Swiss National Bank upgraded it to a Category 1 systemically relevant institution. I asked Swissinfo.ch's business correspondent Matthew Allen what that means.
What it essentially means is that if the bank collapses, it would have, the repercussions on the economy would be too great for the economy to bear. The bank has been included as a too-big-to-fail bank because it holds up to 8% of all Swiss retail deposits and business loans. So it has deep roots in the economy, and if those roots were to be broken, it would cause a great deal of harm to the business and to the depositors who hold their money at the banks.
So what does it actually mean for the bank and its clients?
Well, the bank now has effectively been had a tax slapped on it for risk. The more risk it takes, the more capital reserves it has to hold back to cover those risks, which means it's a disincentive for it to go out into the market and do risky trades, which should make it safer, should make it operate in a much safer manner, so it has less potential to fail. And that's quite good for the clients and for the people who do business with the bank. They should get peace of mind that the bank will not be doing too many risky trades, and the chances of their deposits being lost in a potential collapse are therefore lessened.
The Zurich Cantonal Bank is not the first Swiss bank to be upgraded into this too big to fail category. UBS, Credit Suisse already there. How does this protect the Swiss economy from potential disaster?
Well, the trouble with these banks, as I mentioned before, is they just have too much business going on in Switzerland with retail clients, with mortgage lending, with small business lending, that if they were to collapse, it would leave such a big hole in the economy. People would lose their deposits, they would lose their savings, the businesses that rely on their lines of credit would then potentially be in danger of collapse themselves. So these, what they call systemically relevant services, in other words, services that are absolutely vital for the local economy to succeed and prosper, would therefore be preserved if these banks don't collapse.
So at the moment, there are three Swiss banks that are considered too big to fail. Is this a trend that's going to continue? Will you see more cantonal banks perhaps being upgraded into this category?
I wouldn't say there is too much talk about other cantonal banks being included in the too big to fail list, because Zurich Cantonal Bank is by far the largest. In fact, it's the fourth largest banking group in Switzerland. There are two other groups that are being mentioned as possibly being added to the too big to fail list, the Raiffeisen Group and the PostFinance, which is the post office banking arm. Raiffeisen say the Swiss National Bank have contacted them. They are in discussions on this area. PostFinance say no, but we have no further details as to if either of them will be added. There's just a lot of speculation.
Matthew Allen in Zurich. That's it for this week. Thanks for listening. Read more about these stories and other Swiss news and views at swissinfo.ch. I'm Thomas Stevens.